This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation today with a spirited centenarian. Leonard Francis turned 100 years old on the day after Christmas in Bakersfield, California. He grew up just outside of Bakersfield in a place called Weed Patch and served on the destroyer USS Ludlow during World War II. But you know what? I haven't asked him yet about the start of World War II for the U.S. I'm sure you remember it. How did you experience December 7th, 1941?
Out there in the farm, we all got together. We had to play football every Sunday. And we were out playing football, and that's when we heard that the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. And we were really out there playing football.
Did you have a little break, or did you just keep right on playing football?
Well, we finished playing football because it always ended up in a fight anyway, you know. The Sandlot football. Always ended up in a fight. We didn't think too much of it at the time, how bad this was going to affect us and everything. But I think about every one of those kids were drafted.
So you get married in February. The war starts in December. You've got a deferment because you're working in the oil business. You're married. And then you became a father. Did that change how you felt about the prospect of being drafted now that you've got a wife and a kid and eventually two sons before they drafted you?
Yes, I'll say. It did worry me because I sure didn't want to leave the wife with the two kids, but it come about.
How did she feel about that?
Well, I'm sure she never griped a bit about it. She just knew that probably she was going to have to go to work and just to make the best she could of it. I'll never forget when I was in boot camp in San Diego, how she would pile the kids in. I had a 41 DeSoto, and she would put those two kids in that DeSoto and drive all the way down to San Diego on the weekend to see me.
I bet the other sailors were jealous of that.
Yeah, it was pretty tough on her. I didn't realize at the time how tough it was for a lot tougher for her than was for me. She went to work. She went back to living with her mother and father. So she made up okay. She got through that part of the war.
Well, I'm sure she was hoping and praying, probably saying a lot of prayers that you were going to come back home. And I'm glad that you're sharing this because, you know, we hear a lot of stories. And most of the guys who are still alive today from World War II, they weren't married yet when they went off to the service. They were 17, 18, 19 years old, and they would have never met their spouse if they didn't make it home. But I'm glad that you're sharing this because it did interrupt lives all over this country. And here you got to leave a wife and two boys behind as you sail off to war. What did the Navy have you doing? What was your job on that destroyer, the Ludlow?
I was a gunner's mate. We took care of the 5-inch guns on the rear of the ship. There was 2 5-inch guns on the rear and 2 in the front. That was my job, to take care of that 5-inch gun on the back.
And before you got drafted and went on to serve in the Navy, I'm sure you knew a lot of other guys from the area who were already in the war. Did you get news from the war? Did you have a sense for how it was going or what kind of dangers you might be up against?
No, not really. I just didn't give a thought. I don't know why, but never thought about what could happen. We just took life as it come, you know, and that's just what happened. We had to go and then never give it too much of a thought. When I was in boot camp, like you say, I was kind of older. I think I was about 26 years old, and all the other kids in boot camp were from Texas, and they were 17 and 18-year-old kids. Of course, they all call me Grandpa. I was Grandpa in the Navy. But anyway, when we were down in boot camp, there was 179 in our company, and there was a lot of companies down there. They were all about the same, and they had a softball tournaments every day. I mean, we played softball every day, and our company never lost a game all the time I was there. We set a new record for all the time we were there. We never lost a game. So we were kind of having fun there, but it wasn't too much fun when we left. I was sent out to Honolulu, and I caught the ship in Honolulu. That's how come I ended up on the Ludlow. It was a great ship. Now I look back, I enjoyed it was being on that submarine. I called it a submarine because half the time we were in underwater.
You were below deck a lot?
Yeah, I'll say.
Well, and something else strikes me too, just to get to Hawaii to catch that ship, that's probably the first time that you've ever been on a ship on the ocean coming from Weed Patch.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I didn't know how I would make out, you know, whether I'd get seasick or not. I don't remember getting seasick going over there, but later on the Ludlow, we had some pretty rough weather, and we had gotten a lot of those typhoons over there, and we all got sick. Yeah, it was pretty rough. Those destroyers, they were up and down, you know, weren't like a battleship or a carrier.
I had one destroyer sailor tell me one time that being on a destroyer in a typhoon made you feel like you were a flea on an elephant.
That's right, too. Yeah. Well, we just go up and bounce down and up and down. When those typhoons went out, we had to take everything below deck. Everything got to secure it and put it down below deck. And I thought, well, why don't we stay here in the harbor? Why are we going out in the ocean for the typhoon? And they said, well, because if you're in the harbor, you bounce against other ships and everything, they wreck. You know, you wreck them. And so they went out. So that's how we go out there and just wait it out.
And what does that feel like? Where would you be when the ship is taking all these waves and trying to stay afloat during a typhoon?
Well, we had to stay below because there's no, you look at that ship, you know, you're not off the water very much on the rear. So we all went below in our bunks and stayed there. And that was another thing. We would miss meals because you had to go a top deck to get to the front end where they served the meals was in the front. And we were in the back, our porters, and doggone, we couldn't get, we had a heck of a time to get up there. You couldn't get up there because there was no passageways from the rear to the front. So we missed a few meals.
Well, with the way the seas were turning, you might not have kept the meals down anyway.
Yeah, we didn't want any anyway. You couldn't keep up with your dish.
Was that scary to be down below and you can't see anything, but you just feel this constant roller coaster?
Well, yeah, I thought, man, this thing's not going to hold up because we go up and down. When you come down, it was just a big boom, big bounce. And I thought, man, this thing's not going to hold up, you know, pounding like that. But it did. When the war was over, we went up to Alaska, and we were coming in there at Thanksgiving time. And we were going to get to go ashore for Thanksgiving in Alaska on that too. The orders come that they needed a ship to go to Siberian waters for weather ship to relieve another ship. And wouldn't you know, it was our ship picked. So they sent us back out there. We was in that Siberian waters, and it was just rough all the time. There was no let up there. So we stayed out there a couple more weeks. Doing weather work, I don't know what we were doing. I thought it was crazy, here we out there. So we never even got to go ashore for Thanksgiving.
Did you make it home by Christmas?
Yes, I think we did. We took some soldiers off Attu Island and brought them to San Francisco. There was about 25 soldiers there that was stuck, and I think we picked them up and brought them into San Francisco.
And I don't want to miss anything that we sailed right past on the Ludlow there, but it is a destroyer. And you jokingly said submarine, but that would be the only probably more dangerous kind of boat to be on. The submarines were boats, and they suffered more losses, casualties per number of sailors than anybody else. But a destroyer wasn't necessarily a safe place. You're out there to protect the bigger ships. How'd you feel about that?
Well, you know, we didn't think anything about it. We were mostly watching for submarines and the floating bombs. You know, we just thought that was our duty. We never give it much thought. That's what we're supposed to do. We were together. There was six in the group. And we were protecting the, you know, the other, escorting the other vessels, the battleships and the cruisers and carriers. We had no trouble, you know. It just, at the end of the war, the only thing we did see some those kamikaze planes come across. But of course, they weren't after us. They were after those carriers and battleships. So we would shoot, but I don't think we hit anything.
Yeah, well, tell me that. When General Quarters sounded on the Ludlow, what did you have to do?
Well, we go to man our guns. Of course, those 5-inch guns weren't too good for that. They shot off other machine guns and stuff at that, like that time on the ship. You know, you couldn't move the barrel of that gun on the 5-inch. We just used that mostly for shooting on the islands. We would stand off maybe 4 or 5 miles from the islands and shoot. And when the troops were landing, you know, help them in order to land. But that was getting at the end of the war, and it wasn't really that bad. The Japanese were pretty well licked by that time, except the submarines were still out there, and they wanted us to protect, you know, for those. But we never did. I mean, I think this ship actually sucked a German submarine over before it come over here, Pacific. It had a pretty good record, but we never did sink anything.
Nothing sank you, more importantly. And you mentioned these 5-inch guns, and a lot of people listening probably don't have a concept, and 5 inches doesn't sound very big to them. But this is a big, loud gun. How many guys does it take to operate one of those?
Well, I think it was actually, you know, you had to hand load it. So everything come up from below. We had to pass them up and put them. So there was about 3 guys, you know, putting them in the breech and then handling, you know. Took quite a few guys to pass the ammunition up.
So that was your job, loading?
Yes, load the shells in the chambers there, the barrel.
And what does that sound like when that puppy goes off?
Oh, well, you notice I got ear late. We would put cotton in ours. We didn't have earplugs. We put cotton in our ears, and it was pretty loud. That thing was pretty loud. And that barrel would get so hot, you could not touch it. After you would fire 2 or 3 shells through there, that barrel got hot. It was quite an experience, something I never thought I'd go through, an old foreign kid out in the country.
Well, and I know you can laugh about parts of it now, but the reality is, even though this was later in the war, you're out there at sea, a submarine can sink you, a mine can take you out, one of those Japanese planes could bomb you or crash into you. Your life was in danger. Did you ever find yourself on that ship thinking, you know, I may never see Mary Catherine again. I may never get to see my boys grow up.
Well, you know, at the time you didn't, but later on you got to thinking, oh, golly, you could have been. I don't know, at the time you just didn't think about that. I don't know. Your mind is just blank on thinking you could get hurt. I don't know why, but never did think we would, and we could have, but luckily we didn't. One of the destroyers had a kamikaze hit his radar antenna, and of course he tumbled in, and we seen him. They were off for quite a ways away, but we could see the smoke and everything come up out of the water, but that was about as close as anything come to us. I don't know if we could hit them if they'd come.
And that whole time you were out there at sea during the war and even after the war, because you were out there for, you know, quite a while after the war, did you hear from your wife and sons?
Oh, yes. Quite often we got letters. My wife wrote quite a bit. I would try to write to her, too, and let her know what was going on, because I know she was worried. But we just wrote the letters, and then when we come into a port or somewhere, we get mail call. We sure look forward to that. Yeah, it was one thing we looked forward was mail call, and I always had 3 or 4 letters waiting for me.
Do you remember finding out that Japan had surrendered, that hostilities had ceased?
Oh, yeah. We were out at sea at the time. And when they announced that they set off the bomb, boy, we were so happy. That ship just went crazy, you know, because we knew that was going to end the war. And when we got word that the war was over, they surrendered. They stopped the ship. Now, you won't believe this, but they stopped the ship out there in the middle of the ocean, and we all got naked and jumped on the ocean. We took our clothes off. And everybody jumped in the ocean, and we swam out of there. They put a boat out there with guns in case the sharks or anything were out there. And they made a little row out there, and they back and forth. And we were swimming out there in the middle of that ocean. Can you believe that? Naked. Everybody was naked. They would get as high as they could get on that ship and jump off of it.
Surprised nobody got hurt.
Yeah, nobody. We didn't lose anybody out there. That was quite an experience, too. Yeah, when we heard the war was, they surrendered. That's when the captain stopped your ship, and they let us go swimming in the middle of the ocean.
It kind of sounds like that might have been the most memorable swim of your life.
It really was. Now I think about it, that ocean's pretty deep out there to be swimming in it.
We have heard a lot of stories on Hometown Heroes over the years, but I don't think we've heard a VJ Day story quite like that one. And there are more stories to come from 100-year-old Leonard Francis. He may never have suited up with Joe DiMaggio, but he would be no stranger to world championships after the war. And we'll also hear what going with other veterans on an honor flight to Washington, D.C. meant to him. Find photos of Mr. Francis at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.
Have you ever looked at a box of old videotapes or photos and said, one of these days I'm going to do something with those? I know the feeling. But more importantly, I found the solution at VHSmaster.com. VHS Master will take all your old VHS and 8mm tapes and reels and convert them to DVDs and digital videos, ensuring that your priceless memories will last for years to come. They'll even preserve and restore photos, slides, and audio cassettes. Go to VHSmaster.com. That's VHSmaster.com, and tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.